I'm Mike Mason with a check of the local news on KDLG. Today's snowfall across the Dillingham area has resulted in some slick driving conditions, and the Dillingham Department of Public Safety is advising drivers to exercise caution while traveling. They report that the majority of roadways are covered with snow and there are some slick driving conditions. Drivers are asked to drive with extreme caution, be patient, and watch the road conditions. And some advice is to slow down and practice those safe wintertime driving techniques. A scientific study on Bering Sea corals by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration shows there is no crisis regarding coral protection in the Bering Sea canyons. KDLG's Thea Card has more.
Organizations like Greenpeace have been working to protect the Bering Sea corals. The group claims the canyons found under those waters face the increasing threat of climate change and the uncertainty involved in managing these fisheries. There are no areas protected from fishing along the entire shelf break. Research fisheries biologist at the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, Chris Ruper, says the concern from Greenpeace was in regards to the fisheries in the area.
The two canyons, Pribilof Canyon and Zimchuk Canyon, were both pushed forward or advanced as by some non-governmental organizations as being important, potentially important habitat, coral habitat, and potentially unique features on the Eastern Bering Sea slope.
That concern spurred on a massive $2.5 million study. The analysis of that data produced over 225,000 digital images of the Bering Sea Canyon and slope floor. NOAA is now able to refute the claims that corals are in danger. However, this study was also a revolution for fish and oceanic researchers. Ruper says the images mostly show the seafloor, but there are also some rocks, boulders, and the organisms that live down there. The stereophonic camera underwater snapped images at a rate of 1 per second.
Basically, a camera that has two actual cameras in there, so they're collecting images in sequence. So they're synchronized every second. They would collect two images, one on the left, one on the right. And then you can use that, you can use geometry, and if you calibrate those cameras, you can estimate the size of things and recreate a 3D image of what you saw down there.
Ruper says NOAA is using the images to measure fish predominantly. The old-fashioned way researchers measured the fish involved fishing them, then killing them, and physically placing them on a measuring board. The images are going to be analyzed for future research.
So in the immediate future, the images are all going to be analyzed, and the fish and the invertebrates and the type of habitat they're on are all going to be documented. Fish are going to be counted and length measured. The invertebrates are going to be sized to like height measurements for coral and counted so that we come up with a density estimate for each of our 250 sample sites. And then those density estimates will be compared to a model that we have made of where corals should and shouldn't occur based on the bottom trawl survey.
The photos were the final phase of a 3-year plan. Ruper says the information gathered will be presented to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council in 2015. Then the council will decide if any action needs to be taken to protect the corals. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
Alaska Public Media and Alaska Dispatch News are suing Alaska Governor Sean Parnell over access to documents related to the National Guard scandal. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez submitted her request in May. Both organizations were denied the records by Parnell's office in late September. The complaint says that Parnell's office is not complying with the Public Records Act. The office also failed to provide a log of records related to the scandal and the reasons why they were not provided. Attorney John McKay filed the suit Wednesday on behalf of both organizations. He says they're asking the court to expedite the process because it's important for voters to have access to the facts about Parnell's actions before the gubernatorial election next month.
He's offered explanations for what he did and didn't do. Voters may find that to be reasonable or they may not, but we need to have facts so that people can decide whether he acted appropriately or is being criticized unfairly.
It's up to the court to decide when to respond to the complaint. A federal government investigation of the scandal has revealed incidents of sexual assault and sexual misuse of government funds and ethical misconduct. And a vocal critic of the current administration of Alaska, Governor Sean Parnell, plans to introduce legislation next year to strengthen the Alaska Public Records Act. Recently, the governor's office turned down a request for records related to the ongoing sexual abuse controversy within the Alaska National Guard. Alaska Dispatch and Alaska Public Media both made the request, and both organizations are suing the governor over access to the documents. Democratic State Senator Bill Willikowski from Anchorage confirms that he plans to introduce legislation early next year to strengthen the Alaska Public Records Act. He says the legislation is in response to what he calls the abuse of power by Governor Parnell.
I had requested for months documents regarding the governor's decision-making process on the Medicaid expansion issue. Those were denied for months, and I felt it was a clear violation of the law, and it was very frustrating. I was about to go to court myself, and then the governor held a press conference and released the documents months after he was legally required to do so. So that was the start of it. And then when I saw this, and I saw, again, you had the governor ignoring requests, legitimate requests for months, and then just simply flat out not producing anything, I thought, this is really a flagrant abuse of the law, and we need to make some changes here. So yeah, it's a combination of things, but it's definitely in part because of what we've seen with the National Guard scandal.
Both Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Dispatch were seeking documents and communications about how the Office of the Governor handled complaints about the Alaska National Guard, including complaints about sexual abuse. Senator Willikowski stresses that the legislation he's working on would simply strengthen the rules already on the books about disclosing public records.
There are currently regulations in place right now that require, if the governor refuses to produce documents, and in the National Guard records request, he's refused to release documents saying that he's concerned with protecting the privacy of the victims, and I certainly respect that, but his own regulations right now require that he don't have to produce those, that he simply produce a privilege log with a list of all the withheld documents, the names of the sender and the person who received the document, the general subject matter and the date, and the reason that the document is withheld, specific reason, rather than just making a blanket assertion that I'm not going to produce the document. That's what his regulations currently say. He's ignoring the regulations. So what I intend to do is to propose legislation to put the regulations into statute. So statute has more strength, more weight than regulations. That's number one. But the second thing is increase and strengthen the penalties for noncompliance. And right now the law is that if you intentionally withhold documents, then you can be subject to penalties. And we want to make sure that there's no wiggle room around the penalty provision, and make sure that there are strong penalties in place for noncompliance, because otherwise you're going to get exactly what we're seeing, which is just a complete ignorance of requests.
The current regulations require an answer to public records request within 10 to 20 days. It took the governor's office over 80 days to answer the request put forward by Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Dispatch. Earlier this month, Governor Parnell called a press conference to answer questions about the Alaska National Guard controversy. He stressed that his administration followed up on complaints of sexual abuse in the National Guard and is implementing reforms within the Guard.
Alaskans know me. They know that for years, ever since I was a legislator in the 90s, that domestic violence and sexual assault have been hugely important issues to me. And Alaskans know that when they read a headline that says Parnell took years to act on National Guard misconduct, but that is not a headline that reflects who I am when I took immediate action.
During the October 2nd press conference, Governor Parnell cited his work to address the high rates of domestic violence and sexual abuse in Alaska. The most high-profile aspect of that work is the Choose Respect campaign that has been embraced by municipalities, nonprofit organizations, and individuals across the state. However, Senator Willikowski says the recent controversy in the Alaska National Guard tarnishes the good work of that campaign.
It's a very unfortunate, tragic situation that we're seeing in the Guard. We all know the tragic problems that we have in this state with domestic violence and sexual abuse. And fixing this problem requires more than going out and holding parades in communities. I think it's important to raise awareness, but if you're aware, if you're the governor and you're aware that for years that there is rampant sexual abuse and hostile work environment that has been created in an organization over which you are directly in charge, the governor is the commander-in-chief of the National Guard, and you don't do anything about it, I think that this tremendously tarnishes not only the governor, but really the entire government. It's all of us who are tarnished. I think there was there were a lot of failures here, and I think we need to get to the bottom of this, figure out what happened so that doesn't happen again. And the first step to doing that is by getting these records and figuring out how did this possibly happen, who knew what, and why did they just simply ignore it for all the years that they did. I think that's really the first step.
Governor Parnell defended the decision to not turn over internal records about the Alaska National Guard controversy during his press conference on October 2nd. He specifically cited efforts to protect the victims of sexual assaults by not releasing confidential information like statements that victims made to Guard chaplains.
We've already gotten phone calls from victims who say every time you put out information about these cases, we have to relive what we went through. And there are victim protection laws in place that prohibit the disclosure of those records.
Last month, Governor Parnell called for and received the resignation of the Adjutant General in charge of the Alaska National Guard, and he appointed Brigadier General John Mott to lead a team to implement changes in the Guard based on the findings of the Office of Complex Investigations. The report was released back in September. Mott is the Assistant Adjutant General for the National Guard in Connecticut. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced last week that listing the yellow-billed loon as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act is not necessary at the moment. KDLG's Thea Card has the details.
Under the Endangered Species Act enacted by Congress in 1973, for a species to be considered endangered, their line must be likely to become extinct throughout all or a large portion of their range. For a species to be considered threatened, it must be proven that it is likely to become endangered in the near future. The Center for Biological Diversity and others issued a petition in 2004 requesting the yellow-billed loon be placed on the endangered species list. However, as Field Office Supervisor for the Fairbanks Fish and Wildlife Field Office, Sarah Kahn, points out, the population of the yellow-billed loon has been stable and even growing.
At the moment, the yellow-billed loon has several breeding populations. The one for which we have the most data, which is the one that occurs on the Arctic coastal plain of Alaska, the trend over the last 20 or so years is that the species has a stable population. Or in fact, some of the data suggests that it's even increasing slightly. So that's the population for which we have the most information, and we also think is very representative of what's going on with the loon as a whole.
Kahn says the petition was issued in 2004, and the Fish and Wildlife Service published a report in 2009 that included a 12-month study of the loons. She says it's important when talking about the yellow-billed loon to look at the effects that climate change may have on the bird in the future.
Well, the petition came in a number of years ago. The yellow-billed loon is a species that nests on large lakes in the Arctic. It has a very low population to start with. There's about, we're not sure exactly, but somewhere between 16 and 32,000 of these things nesting worldwide. So it starts with a low population size. It occurs in areas where it is, you know, in an area where climate change is definitely affecting its world, where oil and gas development, and there are a number of other stressors that could be affecting it. And so the people who petitioned the Fish and Wildlife Service to consider it were concerned about the status of the species.
With that in mind, the loon's population is stable. Although the yellow-billed loon is not being considered endangered or even threatened, it remains a conservation priority for the service. Working with tribal, state, and federal partners, the Fish and Wildlife Service will continue to monitor and implement conservation measures in northern and western Alaska. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
Leaders from around the state gathered in Bethel Wednesday for day two of the Association of Village Council Presidents Convention. KYUK's Daisha Eaton reports.
The day started off with Representative Bob Herron, who gave a legislative update. Herron highlighted his work on the Arctic Policy Commission and called on the region's tribes to prepare for next year when the United States takes the helm of the Arctic Council.
United States is assuming the chair of the Arctic Council in April of 2015. And of course, AVCP is a member of ICC Alaska. You are a representation of the Arctic, and what the Bering Sea is and the two river systems mean that you're dependent on the Arctic as well. And so we want to protect it.
The Arctic Council is an intergovernmental forum that addresses issues faced by the Arctic governments and the indigenous people of the Arctic. Heron says he'll work with tribes to ensure indigenous people are recognized as the most important resource in the region as the Arctic opens up to further development. AVCP is a nonprofit organization representing the 56 federally recognized tribes of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. During the convention, tribal representatives meet in Bethel to work on shared issues. Later in the day, Natalie Landreth, the lead attorney for the Native American Rights Fund, addressed the conference. She said that of the handful of cases that the nonprofit law firm has brought against the state of Alaska this year, the voting rights case has the potential for the most impact, but only if Alaska Natives utilize translations and vote. Landreth says voting is 17% to 35% lower in the YK Delta and on the North Slope than it is in the rest of the state.
And what that means is that their voice is counting more than yours. Because when people campaign, and you've seen some of them here, they know who votes and who doesn't. And I've been telling them this region is a sleeping giant. Because you have the numbers, the political power in this region to sway this election and every election.
In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Race officials for the Kuskokwim 300 are waiving the entry fee to any musher looking to run the organization's three races this January. Race manager Zach Fansler says the $400 entry fee for the 300-mile mid-distance dog sled race and similar entry fees for the Bogus Creek 150 and the Akiak Dash are being dropped for 2015. Fansler hopes by dropping the entry fee, more mushers will be able to race.
For our local mushers, sometimes it's hard to put that money out up front. So we've looked into ways that we could reduce those costs for mushers traveling in from outside the Delta. Obviously, the cost of travel there is pretty high. So we thought maybe this was something that we could personally control and try to see if it was something that would encourage more mushers to come to our race.
Entry fees will be waived for any musher who registers before December the 15th. Mushers must also be members of the K300 Race Committee and mileage sponsors, a $100 caveat that Fansler says has been in place for years and shouldn't be anything new for mushers.
That was already a pre-existing requirement to race in the K300 is that you would be a member of our race committee. And that's, you know, for state purposes and things like that. To maintain our corporate status.
Dropping the entry fee for the K300 comes less than a month after the race announced an increase in payouts. The K300 race will see its purse grow by $10,000 up to $120,000. The Bogus Creek and Akiak Dash will pay out $30,000 and $12,500, respectively. It's the second purse increase in 3 years. Fansler says the race's volunteers make it all possible.
We have a very, very small payroll for our employees. We're a very small operation when it comes to that. Our board doesn't get compensated. Things that other organizations maybe have to pay for or pay a lot more for, we are able to either get donated or volunteers to do for us. And I think that's where we have a significant savings over a lot of these other races.
The 2015 Kuskokwim 300 is scheduled to start on Saturday, January the 16th in Bethel. A Sea Alaska subsidiary has closed its office in the small community of Cake. Anthony Malott, the CEO of the Southeast Regional Native Corporation, says Colorado-based Managed Business Solutions lost a large contract.
It led to significant cost reduction throughout the MBS system, specifically almost a 40% reduction in employee count. And unfortunately, that led to additional employment loss, specifically within the Cake office.
He would not say who the contract was with. Corporate documents list Microsoft and Hewlett-Packard as major clients. Malott says the company had about 200 staffers. It's in the information technology business involving software development. The Cake office only employed three people who worked on marketing, administrative support, and project documentation. That's still a significant number for the central Southeast Alaska village, which has a population of about 550 and high unemployment. Malott says the office was in part an experiment to see if one of Sea Alaska's lower 48 companies could employ villagers.
We're always looking for our operating subsidiaries to think about how they can move in to Southeast Alaska. This was an instance where we tried it. The economics did not work, and with MBS looking to reduce fixed cost, this was part of that cost reduction.
Sea Alaska has about 22,000 shareholders with tribal connections to Southeast Alaska, though more than half of the shareholders live elsewhere. Many of the stories you hear during the KDLG local news can be found online at kdlg.org. You can also find contact information on that website if you would like to provide a comment, a correction, or a news tip. That's a check of the local news on listener-supported Public Radio KDLG. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason, reporting.